Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Samach Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Samach Tes. We're going to be focusing on a point that was mentioned in passing in our previous shiur. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which reads as follows. Birur Shitas Rabbi Yochanan, a clarification of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, Binyan HaMakdish Dovar, regarding someone who sanctifies an item to the Beis HaMikdash, Haim bo inon shehe birshusa shel hamakdish kedesh yochel hahekdish. Is it necessary for the item to be in the possession of, in the domain of, the one who is sanctifying? O afilu im eno birshuso, even if it's not in his domain, yochul hahekdish. The hekdish maybe, nevertheless, will take hold. At the beginning of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan will be taking the position or presenting a position that Hekdish will take hold only if it's in the owner's actual domain, physical possession. After presenting Rabbi Yochanan and his position that Hekdish is not chal unless it's in your actual domain, we will then see a series of questions and answers. If we just take a brief glance at the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading, you'll notice we have triangles featured, and we call this a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take structure. The triangle tip facing up represents kushios, questions. To show the Rabbi Yochanan yochul ahegdish afilu shelo birshusa. According to Rabbi Yochanan, from other sources, it appears that hegdish will take hold even if it's when the sanctification takes place. The item is not in the owner's possession. The inverted triangle represents tshuvos, responses. To give us the impression that you really do require it to be in your possession, according to Rabbi Yochanan. This back and forth discussion will continue for quite a while. If you allow your eye to skim ahead, you'll see it continues down a portion of Amud Beis as well. So now the Gemara, Gufa. Gufa indicates focusing on something that had been mentioned in passing earlier. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Gozal velo nisyashu abaylim. Someone stole an item, and the original owner has not yet given up hope on getting it back. Shneim einon yecholim lahakdish. Both of them lack the power to sanctify. Ze lefi shenelo, the thief, because it's not his. Veze lefi shenel birshuso. And this is what we want to focus on. Hence, we dashed underline the phrase "lefi she'eino birshuso." The owner of the item can't sanctify because it's not in his domain. It's currently possessed by the thief. Now we have a long question marking. In other words, you can see the triangle point facing up. This takes you way down into the second wide line of the Gemara. We have a Tanaic source. You could see the frame section. The frame appears as if it's a long Tanaic source. The truth is that within this Tanaic source, there are a number of brackets. First of all, take note of the angular type bracket in this Tanaic source. The reason for these angular brackets is really for an initial skip. So we would skip down to the last word on the line. You'll notice v'hatsnu'in at the end of the angular brackets. That's where the main point appears. Within the source itself, there's some curlicue style brackets or braces that section off pieces of the Gemara that explain details of the source. But as I mentioned, for the first read-through, and it's always helpful to keep track and keep the forest separated from the trees to see what the main point of the question is. So now we start with the long question in the Gemara. Umi Omar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi? Does Rabbi Yochanan really rule thusly that the item has to be in your possession in order for your sanctification, your directions concerning the item, need it be in your possession? V'am Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'stam mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan says we rule like the stam mishnah. Stam mishnah is a mishnah that has no name attached to it. It's the author's name is not mentioned, and Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, who edited the Mishnayos, did so deliberately so as to not associate that particular teaching with an individual, leaving people to think that it's an individual opinion. So when Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, the editor of the Mishnayos, Rabbi Judah the Prince, wanted to demonstrate a ruling through the Mishnayos, he would do so by taking a particular opinion and not include a name along with it. That's called a Stam Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan says that the halacha follows the ruling of the Stam Mishnah, in which we will eventually see the item doesn't have to be in your possession, in your domain, in order for your instructions, your directions regarding the item to take hold. Utnan, and we have in the following source, and here we're going to skip immediately the entire bracketed section, and we get down to a point where the word vahatsnuin, the tsnuin refers to pious individuals who were concerned that the public may consume produce that is from the fourth year of its development. That's called revai. Grapes growing in a vineyard in the fourth year of the grape production, of the fruit production, need to be brought to Jerusalem and eaten there, or they, being that they have sanctity. And there's an alternative that if a person doesn't bring the actual fruits, he can redeem the sanctity onto money and bring the money to Yerushalayim. These tsnuim had fields, had vineyards, and they were concerned that people might take grapes and eat them right there, or eat them outside of Yerushalayim, even though they're fourth year grapes. So what did these tsnuim do? So it says in this source, v'atsnuim manichim es hamois, they would set aside money. This is money that is going to be for redemption purposes. The oimrim, and they would announce, kol hanilkat mizeh mechulol al hamois halolu. The expression nilkat, and this is critically important, is a word in the past tense. They would say anything that was gathered from here, so it's not in their possession anymore. And that's why this is of central importance. Anything that has been gathered from here by passersby, mechulol al hamois halolu, those fruits that are not in their possession anymore are to be redeemed upon these monies. What do we see from here? We see that even though the items of sanctity are not in their domain, they're able to transfer the sanctity. They have control over the sanctity, even though the item is not in their domain, and they're transferring the sanctity onto the money. We call that redemption. V'chitema. Now, that by so that is the main problem. That's the problem. For here we have Rabbi Yochanan ruling like this source. And this source then indicates that matters concerning sanctity do not demand that the item be in your possession. The Gemara asks or suggested v'chitema, you might try to answer and say man tana tsnuim Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the author of the tsnuim is in fact Rav Shimon Gamliel, whose name appeared in the source just two lines above the beginning of the section we read. You might say that it's not a stam mishnah, it's an authored mishnah by Rav Shimon Gamliel, and the name appears. Yeah, but that still is not going to make it such that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't subscribe to that. The Omar Rabba Barbarchanim Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Mokim Shishon Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Ben Mishnosenu, Halacha Kamoisai, wherever Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel's name appears in Mishnayos, like over here, like by the Tznuim, who do not require it to be in your possession, we follow his ruling, so that even if the Tznuim is not a Stam Mishnah, but it's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Yochanan rules like him, that you do not require it to be in your possession. So, wherever Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's name appears, Rabbi Yochanan says, we rule like him. Chutz mi'orev v'tzidon v'rayo achrona. With the exception of three halachas found in different parts of the Shas, they're called by name, Orev and Sidon and Raya Achrona. There's no need for us to explain them. They're found in different parts of the Shas. Rashi himself only makes reference to where they're found. There, we won't rule like him, even though he takes a stand on those three matters. But otherwise, Rabbi Yochanan says, we rule like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So either way, either the Tznuim is viewed as a Stam Mishnah, or the Tznuim is viewed as authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Either way, we rule like that. And there is no requirement of it being in your possession. Now, of course, we skipped a lot of information in the source. The truth be told, the rest of the source doesn't have much bearing on our sugya. So what we're going to do now is we'll go over the rest of the text. We don't ignore text that's in the Gemara, obviously. But as far as the question is concerned, we've presented it. So now, just for the sake of doing a complete job, we'll read the rest of the text. But as far as what we've presented already, we're not going to go over it. We're going to then proceed to the response after that. So now let's go back to the beginning of the Tanaic source. And again, I say this is, as far as we're concerned, it's tangential. Kerem Ravai hoyu mitzainim osoi b'kitzuzos adoma. Kerem Ravai, vineyard fruits, grapes of the fourth year. Farmers would demarcate them with clumps of earth. They would pack earth around these fourth year vineyard or fourth year vines, which would then show the public, look, this is fourth year stuff, and if you take anything from it, be careful regarding the halachas that we mentioned before. And now, if you skip the angular, the curlicue brackets, you see it says Vishel Orlo Becharosis. There was a way of signifying, of demarcating Orla with the Charosis, broken pieces of clay. And then, again, you have those brackets, and it says Vishel Kvoros Besid. It was necessary to mark off graves with Sid. Sid was lime. It's a white material. And in the braces that we have been skipping is the reason for each one of the materials that were just cited as markers. So we mentioned that Kerem Ravai, at the beginning of this Tanaic source, was demarcated with Adoma, with earth. And why that material? Simona ki Adoma. The sign is like the dirt. Ma adoma ika hanoa mino. Just like dirt is something that you can benefit from. You plant in dirt and things grow. You benefit from it. Af hai nami so to revai ki mifrika, when you redeem it. Shori l'sinuya mino, you are allowed to benefit from those fruits. The monies you take to Jerusalem and buy other food there, but the grapes, once they've been redeemed, you can eat them wherever you want. Shori means you're allowed, l'sanuya, to benefit, mino, from them. V'shel orla b'charosis, we said we demarcate orla. Orla are the fruits from the first 3 years. Those are forbidden for one to benefit. Tosis interestingly says here, the little Tosis, the second one on the page says, "Ksas koshe to lo lokat orlo betchila." The first one in this list, if you're mentioning already fourth year fruits, you should maybe make mention of the first 3 years in the first position. So we're going to leave that aside for now. But the source says that orlo was marked off by charosis, from the word cheres. Cheres is clay. Charosis are shards, broken pieces of clay. Simono ke charosis, the demarcating of the orla plants or trees, within their first 3 years of fruit development is, as we said, forbidden to benefit from them. The sign is charosis. Ma charosis she'en hanoa mino. Just like broken pieces of clay, you get no actual benefit from them. They're useless. Af hai the les be hanoa mino mine. This too, orla, is something that you are not to benefit from. V'shel kvoros besid. Graves are marked off with sid, and the reason for marking off graves is many-fold, but amongst the different reasons is to prevent kohanim from passing over the grave and thereby becoming defiled. And anyone who is carrying truma or sanctified items, kodshim, sacrificial material, also must avoid passage over a grave. So it's important to have a grave marked off, and it's the material is the seed, the lime. It's a white material. Simona, the chivar katsamos. It's chivar is white like bones. Umemache, you would add water to the lime, and would kihechi de nichvertve, it would increase the brightness, the whiteness of it. And it says umemache v'shofech. Meshofech is it would be poured all around the grave, and this would accomplish ki hechi de nifritve. I think that the, in order for it to become whiter, was a reference to the mixing of the lime with water. So that would be the way they would mark off the grave. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel bamed mamurim. When is it that we require this heker, the demarcation, which serves to benefit the passers-by? That's b'shvius. That's during the Shemitah year. Why during the Shemitah year is there this particular significance? You see, during the Shemitah year, people will come into one's fields, and they will encounter the orla plants, or the revai vines. The hefker ninhu, during the Shemitah year, the fields are literally speaking, they're unowned. They're hefker, that means the fruits growing in fields is available to the public. And the public's going to come into fields and pick whatever they want. The public should be put on notice. These plants, the kerem revai, the orla, not to pick from them. Aval bishar shnei shvua, but during the other 6 years, shnei means years of shavua. Shavua means literally seven. It has to do with the seven-year agricultural cycle. So during the other six of those years, there's no need for marking things off. What? Who's going to be coming into fields and picking fruits during the other 6 years? A thief. It's private property. Only a thief would be the one coming in to steal fruits. There's no need to protect him from eating forbidden things. Halitehu lo rosha v'yomos. Halitehu is an expression of feed him, feed the wicked one. Hence, we made reference to the thief. V'yomos, let him die. We have no concern about protecting or providing for the welfare of thieves. V'hatsnuin, the pious ones, we saw already, manichin es amois, regarding the revai, they would set money aside, v'yomim kol ha'nilkat mizeh mechul almos halolo, and we already explained that they were, in effect, redeeming produce that was no longer in their possession. They were redeeming the kerem revai, kol ha'nilkat, stuff that was already picked by others, it's no longer in their possession, and yet they're able to transfer the sanctity from that which is not in their possession anymore, and have it imposed upon the monies that they set aside. So what do you see? Rabbi Yochanan rules like the Tznuim practice. You don't need to have things in your possession in order for the sanctity to take hold. The Gemara responds, Amri, this approach is saying that really you do need things to be in your possession. Lo teimo kol ha-nilkat mizeh, elo emo kol ha-mislakeit mizeh. Here grammar is of central importance. Don't read it as nilkat, which indicates past tense. Elo emo, rather state in the tznuin practice, kol ha-mislakeit. Anything that will be taken by the public. Well, that means currently the fruits are still in their possession. And they announce that those fruits that will be taken by others, by passers-by, and now I'm going to emphasize something of critical importance. When they're speaking, they don't know which fruits are going to be those picked by the public. So what's the value of their statement? The value of their statement is that retroactively, when people pick, when passers-by pick the revived fruits, their declaration at the outset will prevent those passers-by from violating the revived by eating them unredeemed outside of Jerusalem. So what are we doing as far as the tznuim are concerned? We're demonstrating now that it is, the fruits are in their possession. How does their announcement work? So we said it works based on something called Brera. This will be a very important topic a little bit later in today's discussion. But in the meantime, everything is consistent. By changing the tznuim instead of nilkat to mislakeit, the fruits are in their possession. Question. Umi Omar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Would Rabbi Yochanan really say that? Namely, make the tznuim into mislakeit, which means must be in your possession. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan has said, tznuim v'Rabbi Dosa omru dover echad. The tznuim that we already saw, and Rabbi Dosa that we'll shortly see, say the same thing. They're one and the same. They say basically the same thing. V'Rabbi Dosa nilkat ka'omar desanya. Rabbi Dosa, in his statement, which we'll see shortly, he deals with things that were already gathered, already taken by others. Rabbi Dosa appears in a Tanaic source that deals with the issue of leket. Leket is one of the tithes that are entitled to the poor. The rule concerning leket has to do with a limit of sheaves of grain that were not harvested by the owner of the field when the owner was harvesting his grains. He grabs a bunch of grains and takes his knife or his sickle and cuts them. If two sheaves escape his hand, his handful, his bunch, when he grabs them to cut them, two sheaves remain outside the bunch. Those two sheaves are to be left there for the poor. If three sheaves escape his sickle, then the owner is entitled to take them. That's not left for the poor. what we're afraid of is a situation where the poor come by to gather their respective tithes, and they're going to take the three remaining sheaves as well, which they're not entitled to. So these uninformed or ignorant poor are in effect going to be in violation of theft. Is there a way to save them from that? So we're going to see in the upcoming source, yeah, there's a way of saving them from that, and that is if the owner declares them hefker, unowned. When the owner declares them unowned, are they in his possession? Or did the poor already take them? Well, you've probably guessed, according to Rabbi Dosa, whose name is going to appear in the second position in this source, the grains in question, the sheaves in question, have already been gathered by the poor. So, and yet his declaration of hefker, of renouncing of ownership, which would then solve the problem of theft, you can see is effective even though it's not in his possession. So once you say that Rabbi Dosa, who does not require to be in possession, equals the tsnuim, that means the tsnuim as well are not in your possession. And then we're back to the problem. Rabbi Yochanan ruled like the tsnuim. That would contradict Rabbi Yochanan's opening statement that you do require to be in possession of. At this point, if Rabbi Dosa, who does not require in possession of, equals tsnuim, that means tsnuim also do not require in possession of. And of course, we saw that Rabbi Yochanan goes along with the tsnuim. Now let's see the source in the text. After the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Yochanan is on record as saying that tsnuim and Rabbi Dosa say one and the same thing, and Rabbi Dosa nilkat komar. We're reading the Gemara. Do you notice the third wide line at the end of the line? Rabbi Dosa nilkat komar. The word nilkat, again, make reference, by the way, to what we've noted in our margin. For me, to keep track of the different fine grammatical alterations and constantly translate them into English is a daunting task. And hence I make reference to the notes in our margin that we've included for your convenience, so that when you see nilkat, you understand that indicates past tense, that the produce in question is not in owner's possession anymore. So Rabbi Dosa nilkat koma. Rabbi Dosa reflects an opinion that doesn't require things to be in your possession for your instructions to take effect. Desanyo. And then we have our Tanaic source dealing with the issue of the leket that was improperly taken by the poor. And there's a fear of theft. And here we're going beyond the letter of the law and trying to protect them, save them from the violation of theft. How do we do that? Rabbi Yehuda says, Shachris, followed by his Oymevi Omer. In the morning, before the poor come, the owner arises and announces, Kol sheyilkitu aniyim hayoyme hefker. Anything that the aniyim will gather today, I'm declaring right now as hefker, as unowned. First of all, what is Rabbi Yehuda's point? It has to be in your possession. That's why he's getting up early in the morning while the grains are still under his control. They're in his domain, they're in his possession. And he makes this announcement. Anything that the poor will gather. Now, I want to add, I'm going to make a point now that we made before, but it's extremely important for later in the Gemara. In order for this type of declaration, this renouncement of ownership to work, tell me something. Does the owner know which grains the poor will be taking improperly? When he announces or renounces ownership, he renounces ownership concerning sheaves that he doesn't know if the poor are going to take any one of these particular sheaves. How does this work legally? The answer is it works through a mechanism called Brera, retroactive determination, that when eventually they take it, I'll know retroactively this is what the owner had in mind. I know that we may have gotten a little bit off the track by focusing on Rabbi Yehuda, but it nevertheless is important to do that. This will all be important information for later. In the meantime, we have Rabbi Yehuda saying that the owner announces the Hefker renouncing of ownership in the morning before the poor gathers. So the produce is still in the owner's possession. Rabbi Dais Omer, li tu se erev Omer, in the evening after all the passers-by, after all the poor had streamed through his field and taken whatever they took, Omer, the owner says, kol shelaktu aniim yehei hefker, whatever they have already taken, I now declare as hefker. What's the main point? Rabbi Dosa does not require to be in your possession for your instructions to work. And Rabbi Yochanan associated the tznuim with Rabbi Dosa. And if that's the case, then the tznuim were also talking about not in your in your possession when they spoke about the revai, all the fruits that had already been taken, they're declaring, they're redeeming. The Gemara answers, because our thrust right now is to maintain the original Rabbi Yochanan statement that it things need to be in your possession. Before this, we kind of fixed the tznuim by changing them to mislakate, using a future term, things that will be gathered, meaning right now they're still in your possession. And here we're going to do this, we're going to do something similar with regard to Rabbi Dosa, not in terms of any word change, but epuch de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi Yehuda. Switch around the shitos, the names, literally switch around the names, and the result would be that what Rabbi Yehuda said before is really Rabbi Dosa saying it. Comes out then that Rabbi Dosa would be saying, in the morning, before it's gathered, the Balabayas declares the Hefker. So that Rabbi Dosa does require it to be in the possession of the Balabayas. Well, alright. So then, the Tznuim, we also saw, according to the way we changed them, they require it to be in your possession. Rabbi Dosa requires things to be in your possession. Rabbi Dosa and the Tzum say the same thing. Rabbi Yochanan passes like the Tzum, it requires to be in your possession. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan said at the very beginning of today's shir. Things have to be in your possession in order for you to be able to control them, to be able to sanctify them, redeem them, declare them unowned, etc. We continue in the Gemara with a question. Amai Afchis Masnisa, why did you switch around a Tanaic source? Abcha l'Rabbi Yochanan v'Eimo, why not switch Rabbi Yochanan's statement around and say as follows? Tznuim that are that say mislakate, and that presentation of the tznuim is what we did before, meaning the mislakate means the future term, meaning it's still in your possession, and have Rabbi Yochanan be saying, Tznuim Rabbi Yehuda, Omru Dovrecha, don't switch around Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Dosa in this Tanaic source. Rabbi Yehuda, he said, must be in your possession. The Tznuim, as we changed them earlier, also must be in your possession. So they're saying one in the same. Why is it so important to have Rabbi Yehuda being switched around? To have Rabbi Yehuda reflecting the idea of his hefker regarding things that have already been taken, that are no longer in the owner's possession. Why was that so important? The Gemara says, Amri, lo sagya de lo mishapchis masnisa. That phrase means it wasn't enough that we shouldn't have switched around the Tanaic source. In simple terms, it means we had to switch around the Tanaic source. De Bahamas Nisin Kotoni, in this Tanaic source, if you don't switch things around, the Islay the Rebuta Brera, that Reb Yehuda would is depending on or holds by the concept of retroactive determination. So that if you don't switch it around, you're going to have Reb Yehuda relying on Breira. What do we mean by that? We explained it earlier, deliberately, so that will be easier now. What does Reb Yehuda describe? An owner in the morning, before the poor came through the field, and not knowing which sheaves the poor are going to be taking, he declares Hefker, renouncing ownership. But which grains have the ownership been renounced? Concerning which ones? I'll only know later on. Those that the poor actually take are the ones retroactively that the owner had declared, had renounced his ownership over. Yeah, but what's the problem with having Reb Yehuda subscribe to that? V'shamino leila Reb Yehuda ba'alma. The Gemara continues here on the last line, but we have on record, we have heard Reb Yehuda in general, the less lay Breira. Reb Yehuda simply doesn't hold from Breira. And therefore, I have to have Rabbi Yehuda saying, kol shaloktu. And that way, the declaration concerns grains that are already in the hands of the poor. And, well, once it's already in the hands of the poor, I'm not relying on any retroactive clarification. Where do we have Reb Yehuda on record as saying that Breira doesn't work? Disnan. We continue with a Tanaic source quoted on the top of Omid Beis. This source, in my estimation, is one of the most commonly quoted sources you'll find in the Shas, and if you look at the side of your standard Gemaras, you can see how many times it's cited. The source deals with the purchase of wine from the Kusim. Kusim, just to keep things simple, are people that could not be relied upon for the laws of tithing. And I'm buying wine very close to Shabbos, and I don't have any vessels that are tohor, readily available, any undefiled vessels that are readily available for me to do the tithing of the wine, and yet I need to drink the wine on Shabbos. So what are my options? What can I do? So it says in the source, Halokeach Yayin Mibein HaKusim, Omer, one who buys wine from amongst the Kusim, you say, make the following oral declaration. Shnei Lugin Shani Osid Lahafrish Harehein Truma. 2 out of 100. We'll say it's 2%. That I'm declaring 2 lugin that I will eventually leave over. In other words, I'm going to drink a flask of wine that I bought from the Kusim. I'm not going to finish it to the very end. I'm going to leave over some. So 2 of the lugin that I'm going to leave over, harehein truma. I'm declaring them right now as truma. That's the tithe given to kohanim. Asora ma'aser rishon. 10, that's 10%, 10 lugin of, if you're dealing with 100 lugin, then 10 of them will be Meiser Rishon, the tithe that's given to the Levites. That's 10%. And then once you separate 10 from 100, you're left with 90. And now another 10% of that which remains, Tisha Meiser Sheni. Let's not be particular about the 2 of Truma. Leave that aside because Truma even Kol Shehu is enough to fulfill the tithe of Truma. So you're left with, after you removed your Meiser Rishon, you're left with 90 Lugin. So 9 of them, Tisha Meiser Sheni. That's Meiser Sheni. And now Meiser Sheni is something that lends itself to redemption. Umechal. Mechal means you redeem the value of those 9 lug. Lug is a liquid measure. 9 lug of the Meiser Sheni. Mechal. You redeem on money. So what have I done right now? So I have this flask that has 100 lug in it. I have a barrel or a flask or whatever you want to call it. It's got 100 lug in it. I haven't touched it yet. It's a few minutes before Shabbos, and I've announced that 2 of the lugim. Now, which lugim are you going to declare as truma? Well, I don't know right now. I'll only know at the end when I the wine that I did not drink that I leave over, I'll be able to say, well, two of them are Truma and 10 of them. Which 10 are going to be your Maaser Rishon right now? I don't know which 10, but I'll know that after I start drinking this flask, from the flask, 10 that will be left over eventually, those I will know retroactively are the ones that I referred to when I spoke of Maaser Rishon. And the source then says, after you did this redemption, you can immediately start drinking. And while you're drinking it, you're not considered drinking tevel. Tevel is that which is untithed. Something that's very, it would be a very severe offense to drink tevel. But no problem, you're not drinking tevel. Why not? I'm able to rely on those lugin, that wine that I'll leave over at the end. And I'll be able to say, oh, the wine that I left over, and that was what I had that separated initially as the tithe, retroactively becomes clear that this is what I had in mind when I tithed, and the rest that I was drinking was chulin, was all right, was mundane, was common, was considered tithed. So according to Rabbi Meir, through your reliance on Breira, we allow you to start drinking immediately. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Oistrim, and we've dashed underline Rabbi Yehuda's name. They say nothing doing. You can't do that. You can't start drinking relying on what you're going to leave over later on. Ostensibly, they do not hold from Breira. So as a result, it was very important for us to switch around the Tanaic source. And in having done so, we have Rabbi Dosa saying Kol Sheyil Ketu, and as we said earlier, Rabbi Dosa, like the Tznuim that we also had to doctor up, both of them say it's got to be in your possession, which is fine. Rabbi Yochanan originally also said things have to be in your possession, and Rabbi Yochanan ruled like the Tznuim, and Rabbi Yochanan said that the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa say the same thing. Everything's fine. Let's continue in the Gemara. We have a question. You'll notice it's a long question. Amri, we ask, Sof amayka afchis lo lemas nisin. Why did we, in fact, switch around the Tanaic source, Mishum de Kashya, de Rabbi Yehuda, ad Rabbi Yehuda, because we had what otherwise would have been a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda regarding the matter of Breira. Well, hashtonami, but as things are right now, Kashya de Rabbi Yochanan, ad Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to demonstrate a stira within Rabbi Yochanan. The Amris le Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan who ruled like the Tznuim, he said, lo teimo kol ha nilkat, in the past tense when it's not in your possession anymore, elo eimo kol ha mislakeit. So with regard to the Tznuim, we saw Rabbi Yochanan changing it to say kol ha mislakeit, which was a future term, which enabled us to have it in your possession. But in order for that redemption to take place on stuff that's still in your possession, you have to come on to the issue of retroactive clarification. That means that when the passersby will eventually take the revai, then retroactively your redemption that you did beforehand will take effect. Almo is le Breira. That would put Rabbi Yochanan in the position of holding from Breira, from that we'll say legal concept of allowing retroactive clarification to be relied upon. Ah, v'hal Rabbi Yochanan les le Breira. But Rabbi Yochanan, we know from another statement of his that he doesn't hold from Breira. The Omer of Asi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Ho'achin Shecholku, brothers that divide an estate they inherited from their father. This law, before we can read even another word, we must introduce the concept of Yovel. Yovel, the Jubilee year, in times past, was an occasion at which all purchased fields, people who purchased real estate, would return their land to the original owner, Now, when we speak about the original owner, it means a person who had inherited that part property from his father, who in turn inherited from his father, going back to the time of Joshua and the conquest and division of the land of Israel. But the Jubilee year represented a type of restart, where everything goes back to the way it was once, in terms of being in the possession of those that can trace themselves back, so to speak, to the original distribution of the land. So that is what we've just described, then applies to purchasers, people who purchase land. They purchase land with, everyone knows that when the laws of Yovel were in force, they knew that they were buying the land with this time restriction element. Now, Rabbi Yochanan says that brothers who, as a group, they are inherited from their fathers. So we're not dealing with an actual purchase in a conventional sense. Ha'achin shecholku, brothers that divided their father's estate. So each brother has a particular parcel of land. And believe it or not, Rabbi Yochanan says, lekuchos hein, each brother is viewed as a purchaser. U'machzirin zeh lozeh b'yovel, and they return to one another. In other words, they gather all of the lands that they had received. Gather, I mean, in a figurative sense. It's all, it becomes one large parcel as it was when their father was alive. And then they re-divide. What does this show us? This shows us that when any one brother received a parcel of land, we do not say that which you received retroactively is that which you were anticipated to inherit originally. If we would say that achin shecholku, when brothers divide, they keep their land, we can say that retroactively each parcel of land is that which they were designed to inherit. But we don't say that. Rashi, let's take advantage of Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines. Lekuchos hein, they're viewed as purchasers, not inheritors, not heirs. Lekuchos hein. Again, here we have a legal concept that, let's say, contradicts or runs counter to a physical reality. Yes, of course, in reality they've inherited their father, but in legal terms, they're not viewed as an heir. They're viewed as purchasers. What practical difference is there? So Rashi goes on. For lo amrinon, and being that we classify them as lukuchos, we do not say huvror hadavar. Once any brother receives a given parcel, it now becomes clear shezeh chelek hamagia l'chol echad. Skipping the line for a minute. El amrinon chelko shelzeh hayaroi lozeh ve'echlivu. Rather, we entertain the idea that if you have two brothers, you have Reuven and Shimon, that the parcel that Reuven got really was designed for Shimon, and that which Shimon got was really designed for Reuven, and they switched around. We skipped a couple words. Let's read this again. From the velo amrinon, dashed underline, velo amrinon, we don't say, huvur hadover shezeh chelek hamagia l'chol echad, Yerusha lo komer achmona dehadir. When something is an inheritance, a real bona fide inheritance, the Torah doesn't say that goes back. So we don't say that what each brother gets is considered in legal terms an inheritance. Elo amrinon. Rather, we do say chelko shozeh, that which Reuven got, hayaroi lozeh, was fit for Shimon. Ve'hichlifu, and they switched around, and that which Shimon got was really fit for Reuven. Vareu kemekach. And therefore we view them as purchasers. Ve'chayzrin u'machlifin bi'ovel. And they go back and they switch around in Yovel. They redistribute in Yovel, in the Jubilee year. Let's go back to our Gemara. So we saw Rabbi Yochanan holding that achen shecholku lekuchos hein u'machzirin zeh lozeh b'yovel, and as we just learned, that indicates to us that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we do not hold from Breira. Ah, but a moment before we said that Rabbi Yochanan's take on the Tznuin was to create a situation where I need to rely on Breira. And that was all in the interest of having the revive, those fourth year vines, to be in his possession. What are we going to do about all of this? Answer: Ela li'olam kol hanilkat. So rather, we will have the tznuim saying kol hanilkat. It's a past tense. That means they don't require it to be in your possession. And Rabbi Osa and the Tznuim are saying the same thing. So Rabbi Dosa also doesn't require it to be in your possession. So Rabbi Dosa, we're not going to switch around the source as we suggested before. So then you have Rabbi Dosa and the Tznuim not requiring things to be in your possession. And what about Rabbi Yochanan, who, when we opened up the entire shir today, he does require things to be in your possession. And Rabbi Yochanan, we thought was relying on a Stam Mishnah, but the Stam Mishnah or the Tznuim as we had it are now not holding like that. They don't require it to be in your possession. So we answer. Notice we have a long answer marking. Rabbi Yochanan, stamo achrino ashkach disnan. Rabbi Yochanan, who insists on things being in your possession, he found another stam, another unnamed Tanaic source upon which he relied. Disnan. The source says, ein hagonev achar haganov mishalem tashlume kefel. Of course, this is from our Mishnah. This should be familiar. The thief who steals from a thief, he does not pay kefel. The first thief pays kefel, the double payment, but not the second one. Amai. Why is that? Why is he exempt from paying the double? Bishlamo leganav rishon lo mishalem. I understand that he's not going to pay kefel to the first thief. The gunav mibeis ha'ish. The pasuk speaks about an item stolen from the owner having to pay. Then the thief has to pay double. Velomi beis haganav, not something stolen from a thief. Elo labailim nishalem. Why not have the second thief pay the original owner kefel? Elo lav shmamino. We see from here ze lefi she'eno shelo. The first thief doesn't get the kefel because it wasn't his item to begin with. But the original owner doesn't get the kefel either because the item was not taken from his domain. So from that which we see, that the ganav min haganav is not paying kefel to the original owner because the item was not in the domain of, in the possession of that original owner, Rabbi Yochanan learns his rule that that original owner cannot sanctify items that are not in their possession. Because of this, we'll say this lack, this weakness or lack in ownership, that by virtue of fact that it's not in his domain. And as we said, his lack of it being in his domain prevents him from getting the kefel. It also prevents them from being able to sanctify. The Gemara asks, Umay chazis the ozil bosra histamo. What is it that you see fit and so authoritative to follow this stam that says it has to be in your domain? Levid ki hai stam adetznuin. Follow the stam source the feature that snew him, and there it does not need to be in your domain. Why is Rabbi Yochanan so hot on it being in your domain? Answer, Mishum de Messiah le kra. There's a pasuk that supports this idea that sanctity, sanctification of items, is contingent upon that item being in your domain. The pasuk says, V'ish ki yakdish es beisei kedish l'Hashem. The pasuk speaks about a man when he declares his house as sanctified to God. That's a literal translation. But what we derive from here is, ma beiso birshu, so just like your house is in your possession, af kol birshu, so to anything else that you're going to sanctify has to be in your possession. So that we're not focusing, or Rabbi Yochanan is not focusing on stam Tanaic sources alone, but more on the on that stam Mishnah that has a scriptural basis on which to base itself. So at this point in the Gemara, we've essentially come to the end of the clarification of Shitas Rabbi Yochanan that said that a person cannot be makdish something unless it is in the owner's, unless the item is in that owner's domain. It's in his possession, not in the hands of a thief. Before going further, let's glance at the side of the Gemara. We have a structural note because we're shortly going to encounter a diamond marking, one of our series markings, and you'll notice that these diamonds continue down to the bottom of the page, practically. And also a double underline will be appearing. So in our margin, we have a mivnet, a structural note, which reads, Gimel Deos, three opinions. We'll see Abaye, Rava, and Ravina, Shemis Yachsim, Lahodim Rabbi Yochanan, that relate to that which Rabbi Yochanan had said, the Rabbi Doisot Snur Amru Dover Echad. That's a statement that Rabbi Yochanan made. We haven't rejected that statement. That statement stands as far as how Rabbi Yochanan himself rules. So we saw he based himself on a different source to come to his conclusion. But one thing is clear, that according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Tznuim, as well as Rabbi Dosa, they're two. Well, they represent two authorities, but they say the same thing. The double underline highlights an expression, Ilav Yom Rabbi Yochanan, where Abaye and Rava and Ravina all will open their comments by saying, if Rabbi Yochanan had not said what he said, then we would have had a different take on the matter. Of course, we're yielding to Rabbi Yochanan, who was greater than us, but if he wouldn't have said that, we would have had a different take on things. So we've noticed how this, what we often do in Gemara markings, is highlight repetitious phrases, repeating phrases, and you see that Abaye opens with his E Lav de Rabbi Yochanan, and Rava does the same. And another phrase that we've highlighted is the expression Amru Dover Echad. So now we continue in the Gemara. Amar Abaye, E Lav de Amar Rabbi Yochanan Tznuin v'Rabbi Doisa Amru Dover Echad. The Tznuim, you'll notice we have a little star, and I mentioned before, many times when you have a Gemara that has many variables in it, and a lot of activity going on, it's easy to lose track. So to remind us of what the Tznuim spoke about, we mention on the side in that little starred note that the Tznuim, they spoke about Ganovim, thieves, with regard to Revai. If you look back at the source, you saw that within that Tanaic source there was reference made to the Shemitah year versus the other 6 years. So the source was dealing, made reference to thieves during the other 6 years, and the Tznuin yet protected them, saved them from sin by arranging for the redemption of what otherwise would have been forbidden. To whom? To thieves. That's the topic that the Tznuim dealt with. Rabbi Dosa, what was the topic he dealt with? He dealt with the poor who might take mistakenly things that are not really leket, thinking that it's leket. So we've mentioned what each one dealt with, and Abaye says if Rabbi Yochanan had not declared that the tznuin Rabbi Doisa amru davar echad, that they say the same idea, the same thing. We already explained what they said, the idea of making a declaration or a redemption on stuff that that wasn't in the owner's possession anymore, and yet it's effective. So that they spoke at the end of the day after things were already collected, and the owner's intentions are fulfilled to save those people from sin. So if Rabbi Yochanan had not said that the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa said the same thing, Hava Amino, I would have said, says Abaye, Tznuim Isluhud Rabbi Dosa. The Tznuim would have accepted what Rabbi Dosa said, Rabbi Dosa less late, the Tznuim, but Rabbi Dosa would not have gone so far as the Tznuim. Tznuim, and here the Gemara explains each point. Tznuim Isluhud Rabbi Dosa. The Tznuim would have subscribed to Rabbi Dosa. Uma beganav avdu rabbonon takanto, mind you, the topic that the Tznuim dealt with was to save a thief, a wicked person, from sin. And as a result, the rabbis made an enactment, namely, the setting aside of the money and the redemption after they had already taken it. So the Tznuim they're very far-reaching in their approach. So, mind you, for a thief, the rabbis made special considerations. Aniyim tzricha lemeimar, for the poor, it might be ignorant. The aniyim was the topic of Rabbi Dosa. Certainly the tznuim would have subscribed to what Rabbi Dosa recommended. Rabbi Dosa's topic was simply to save the poor from a mistake. Rabbi Dosa less late the Tznuim. Rabbi Dosa, on the other hand, he wouldn't have gone along with what the Tznuim did. Aniyim hu davdu l'rabbona takanta, for the poor, Rabbi Dosa was willing to suggest that the hefker at the end of the day for what people had already taken would be an effective means of saving them from the mistake of from having mistakenly taken things. Avokanov, the topic of the Tznuim, which involved thieves, lo avtule rabbonan takanto, there the rabbonan wouldn't have gone out and made special provisions to save them, to save the wicked from sin. So that, as far as Abaye is concerned, I don't see the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa being interchangeable with one another. Omar Rava, Ilav Dom Rabbi Yochanan Tznuim Rabbi Dosa Amru Dover Echad. If not for Rabbi Yochanan's declaration that the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa go along with each other, Hava Amino, I would have thought Man Tana Tznuim, Rabbi Meir he, who is behind the Tznuim, Rabbi Meir. And as we go on in the Gemara, we'll understand much better what Rava is saying. In the meantime, by saying that the Tznuim is Rabbi Meir, we will end up at the end of this long point. We'll end up saying, as far as Rava is concerned, the Tznuim, who equals Rabbi Meir, would not have gone along with what Rabbi Dosa had done. Let's see. Lav Omer Rabbi Meir Meiser. That's Meiser Sheni. The 10% tithe that people separate in the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the agricultural cycle, that Meiser Momon Gavoa Hu. It's considered something divine. Of course, it grows in your field, but once you tithe it, it becomes like something of a high level of holiness. Momon Gavoa, literally money belonging to on high. V'afilu hochi, even so, l'inyan pedia, regarding matters of redemption, ukme rachmona birshuse, the Torah, rachmona is the Torah, establishes it in your domain. So that even though you're dealing with something of a high level of sanctity, and technically speaking, it's not yours. When you say something is mamon gavoa, that would mean that I can't do with it as I please. Could you let us say take these meiser sheni fruits and buy something for your personal needs with it? No, it's mamon gavoa. And as I said, in that sense, it's not really yours, and yet you're able to redeem it as if it's something that is yours. We said, the pasuk says, "V'im goal yigal ish mi ma'isro chamishisay yosef alav." That when the owner of Meiser Sheni wants to redeem it, he redeems it and adds a fifth to it. Karya rachmona ma'isro u'ma'isav chaimish. The Torah calls it your ma'iser. And being that you're the owner of it, you have to add a fifth. That's in order to accomplish redemption. Kerem Revai Nami, regarding Kerem Revai, which was the topic of the Tznuim, is Gomar Kedesh Kedesh Mimeiser through a Gezerah Shava. It is like Meiser. Ksiv Hocha by Revai, which was, again, I repeat, the topic of the Tznuim. It says, Kodesh Hilulim, Uksiv Gabi Meiser, V'chol Meiser Oretz, Mizer Oretz, Mipri Oetz, Lashemu, Kodesh. We've dashed underlined the key words. The word Kodesh appears in both topics. Ma Kodesh Dichsiv Gabi Meiser, just like Kodesh, which is written by Meiser, Meiser Sheni, Afal Gab De Momon Gavohu, even though it's holy, it's considered the heavenly money, a heavenly possession, l'inyan pedia, regarding matters of redemption, ukme rachmona birshusei. The Torah establishes it in your possession, considered like yours. Afhai kodesh nami, so too regarding the kodesh, afhai kodesh nami dichtiv gabi Kerem Revai, so to the Kiddush that you see in the context of Kerem Revai, Pagav the Lav Momo Didehu, even though it's not really yours, in Achuli, regarding Achuli, that's redemption, Ukme Rachmono Birshusei. The Torah puts it into your possession that you're able to redeem it. Daha Ki Ise Birshusei Nami, Ha Lav Didehu, Vaha Motzi Mochil. Mind you, even when it's in your possession, it's not really yours, and yet you're able to redeem it. Mishum hachi motzi mochil, because of this, because the Torah considers it in your domain, so you're able to redeem it. So that you have something that's not really yours, but the Torah has a special enactment for you to be able to redeem it. That's all fine and good with regard to Meiser Sheni and Revai Avol Gabi Leket Kivan de Mamoino di Day. But with regard to Leket, we mentioned before, those are sheaves of grain that during the harvesting process you didn't harvest in one shot. It's not, here was no reference to anything holy. It's your stuff. Mamoino di Day, it's your mamon. This, by the way, was the topic of Rabbi Dosa. Oh, regarding things like that, ki ise birshusei hu de motzi mafkirle, when it's literally in your possession, you can declare it. You have control over it. You can declare it an unowned. Ki lese birshusei lo motzi mafkirle, when it's not in your possession anymore. For example, in the evening after they all came by, and you want to save them from theft and declare it unowned, You can't do that anymore. It's too late. It's not in your possession. So you can't declare it unowned. So what do you see from here? That Rava, if you were just to remove Rabbi Yochanan from the picture for a moment, Rava says, in looking at the Tznuim, it's true they spoke about redeeming things that were not in their possession anymore. But that's a special allowance that we saw already by Meiser Sheni. We apply it to Revi, and hence, even though it's not really yours, it's something you still are entitled to redeem. That's fine with regard to Moma Gavoah. However, when it comes to mundane matters like Leket, the Tznuim wouldn't go along with what Rabbi Dosa suggested. The Tznuim would have demanded it to be still in your possession. No end of the day Hefker declaration. And yet Rabbi Dosa says that works. So as far as Rava is concerned, if not for Rabbi Yochanan, I wouldn't have said that the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa are in agreement with one another. Omer Ravina, Ilav the Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Tznuim Rabbi Dosa Mrudover Echad. If not for Rabbi Yochanan's presentation that the Tznuim and Rabbi Dosa's two separate entities say the same thing, Havamina, I would have thought Man Tana Tznuim Rabbi Dosa He. I would have thought that the authorship of Tznuim was Rabbi Dosa himself. In other words, they're not two separate schools saying the same thing, but they're one in the same. They're literally one in the same. Ki hechi delo tikshi stam mishnah l'Rabbi Yochanan. By having the Tznuim essentially Rabbi Dosa, what the Tznuim practice was authored by Rabbi Dosa, by having set things up like that, says Ravina, then I wouldn't have had any problems having Rabbi Yochanan be confronted with a difficulty concerning the Stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan, he was the one that that required things to be in your possession. That's how Rabbi Yochanan was presented at the very beginning of today's shiur. If I would make the Tznuim actually authored by Rabbi Dosa, so then I would not have a Stam Mishnah, the Tznuim, who were the Stam, saying things need not be in your possession. That would not have been a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, who says things need to be in your possession. Why would that have solved the problem? The Gemara continues, for Rabbi Yochanan kestam yechido lo omar. Rabbi Yochanan, who said that we are to follow a Stam Mishnah, he would never have said so regarding a Stam Mishnah that's really authored by a minority or individual opinion, i.e., in this case, Rabbi Dosa. However, that's as far as Ravina is concerned. But now, with Rabbi Yochanan in the picture, we can't say that the Tznuim are a reflection of that they are authored by Rabbi Dosa, but rather they did represent either a Stam Mishnah or of Shimon ben Gamliel, and that forced Rabbi Yochanan to find another Stam Mishnah with a pasuk to go along with it, in order for him to base his opinion that you do require things to be in your possession. As you can see, we've read the first, the top line of Daf Ayin Omed Aleph, and we have some new markings to explain. We have on the side of the Gemara topic heading in the margin at this, which we call Hilchus Harshah, the laws of Harshah. Harshah is, in English, we could use the word assignment, or assign power of attorney, giving control or possession of things that you own to someone else through a document or an entitlement. So we're going to have a discussion concerning that matter. Under the Mivneh, the structural note, you notice a house marking. The house marking, Halachas Shel Nahardoi, Binyan Ksivas Harsha. We're going to see laws presented to us by Nahardoi regarding laws governing the writing of this power of attorney. There is a use of a volcano shape that represents Shnei Lishonis Hafuchais B'mahu Shitas Nahardoi Legabi Ksivas Harsha Amitaltalin. Two opposite versions of the Nahardoi regarding the writing of a Harsha concerning portables, assigning power of collection over portables. That might sound a bit abstract, but hopefully things become much clearer as we go into the Gemara. So here we go with the first Lashon of this particular section, this particular law. That's why we have the Aleph. A few lines later, you see there's a squiggle underline, Ikar D'Amri, a second version, Beis, then follows. The Gemara. Amri Nahardoi, Lo Kasvinon Urchesa Ametaltali. One does not write over a power of attorney concerning portables. What would be an example of power of attorney concerning portables? So just imagine someone had entrusted items into the possession of a shomer, a bailia, a watchman. And you want someone to retrieve those items for you. You might have thought that you can do so by giving him this a friend of yours. We'll call him I don't want to refer to him in legal terms right now as an agent, because that is not what a power of attorney is. So Nahardoi says that if you want to have someone retrieve those items for you through assignment, it doesn't work. By assignment, we can say you are in effect making this middleman the temporary or interim owner of the item. That is in contrast to agency or a shaliach, where that's not the case. So Nahardoi says regarding assignment of ownership concerning portables, you can't do that. So he said that's a lo kasvinon urchasa. Urchasa is harsha'a amitaltli. Omar Ravashi lameimar mai taima. What's the reasoning behind that? Omar le mishum de Rabbi Yochanan. It's because of Rabbi Yochanan's principle. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan gozal velonis Yashua bailim. This we've seen numerous times already, and we've seen it even today. The description of a theft at where the original owner still has hope on seeing his stolen item back. Shneim enam yicholim lahakdish, the thief as well as the owner, neither one can sanctify it. Ze lefi sheinu shelo, the thief because it's not his. Veze the original owner, lefi sheinu birshuso, because it's not in his possession. So this lacking of bilis, of control over it, because of it not being in your possession, which prevents the owner from sanctifying it when it's in someone else's domain, prevents the owner from transferring ownership over to this middleman when the item is in the shomer's domain. Rashi at the top line says, "Mishum d'Rabbi Yochanan d'ha'il v'enu b'rishus ha'bailim." Since it's not in the domain of the owner, "Enu yochel la'knoisa l'shaliach." You can't transfer ownership of it over to the middle party, to the third, to the shliach. Literally, is to the agent. So the agent can't become the owner of it, the interim owner of it. Hilkach im avad, if the item gets lost, yochol lachsuv ledvo miyad hanemon. The original owner can seek restitution from the original Naaman, the original one entrusted with it. Why? Because the shaliach hasn't become the possessor of it. In the meantime, who is the possessor of it? The Naaman, the shomer. Let us continue in the Gemara. Iko the Amri. Amri Nardoi, another version of Nardoi states, Lo kasvin en urchasa ametapoli de kafre. The restriction on assigning ownership through power of attorney to regarding portables is only with regard to portables concerning which the shomer denied having. In other words, if I claim from the watchman, from the bailey, I want my entrusted item back, and I made this claim in court, and the shomer, the one entrusted with it, denies having it, you cannot assign, you cannot write a harshah to a shaliach concerning that. So we continue in the Gemara. Taima de Kafre. The reason for the restriction is because it's an item concerning which there was denial. The Merci Keshikrof, I would write up a document assigning ownership of my entrusted article to an agent. But it looks like a lie. In what sense? I'm giving to the agent something that doesn't exist by that entrusted party. He denied having it. So how can I write up a document saying, go and take from so-and-so my article when that so-and-so denies having it? So writing a document like that would appear to be a lie. That's called merci keshikra. Avolo kafre kasvinon, if it's an item that hadn't undergone any denial, you could write the harshah. You notice with our markings, we dashed under the line here the word kasvinon. This is in contrast to the top line where we had dashed under the line lo kasvinon, to give you a sense of the opposite nature of these two versions. According to version one, you would never write a harshah concerning portables, and according to the second version, you would. There's a vast amount of discussion on this whole topic. We're basically presenting the Gemara, translating it along with the Rashi approach to things. I just want to make mention that the Tosfos disagrees with this approach. The second Tosfos, he says, Lo kasvina urkas amataldi dafka amataldalin de gazle, avo mataldin de pikodin kasvinon. So he says that regarding mataldin that are entrusted to a shomer, you would be able to write a harashah. But Rashi does, Rashi is not going in that direction. Rashi presents a much a broader, we'll say, restriction. We continue in the Gemara. The Amri Nahardoi, another law concerning Harshah or Urkisa. The Amri Nahardoi, Urkisa de lo Kosiv Bey, an assignment in which the following text is missing. Zil Doin Vizochi, Vi Apik Linafshoch, Les Bey Mashosha. Go and litigate and take it for yourself. Then it has no, that if it's lacking that key statement, les bei mashosh, it has no substance. My taima, why is that? Why if the agent has an assignment and that phrase is missing, why is it totally ineffective? Why is that which he does have going to be ineffective? My taima, mishum di omar lei heich, the shomer. the nifkad, the one to whom the item was entrusted, will say to this agent that comes with this deficient harshah, he'll say, lav bal dvorim didiyad, I have nothing to do with you. I have an item that was given to me by an owner of it. You're not an owner of it. How do we know that? Because this key phrase was lacking. The phrase indicated that by having this assignment, go and get the item and acquire it for yourself, i.e. for the agent himself. But if the agent doesn't have that in his harshah, the one entrusted can just push him off saying, I have nothing to do with you. I have an item owned by someone, and I give it only to the owner of it. Omar Abaye, V'i Kosev Bey, if the harshah had written within it, L'mechse L'shlish Ruvia, that I'm the owner of the item, says to the agent through this harshah, go and litigate and attempting to retrieve the item concerning which you will be in possession of 50%, 33%, or 25% of it. So if that appears, in other words, the agent is made into a partial owner of it, we say as follows, Migu dimishtoi dina apalga, since he, the agent, is able to litigate regarding half of it, or concerning half of it, he's an owner. Mishtoi dino akula, he has a right to then challenge the shomer in getting its release in its entirety. In other words, once you have your foot in the door, you can go all the way. Omar Amemar, itofas lo mafkinon mine. Regarding this phrase, there are two lishonos in Rashi. So we look at Rashi, v'i tofas, the first approach, shliach mishel ne'mon. If the agent grabs the item from the entrusted one, in a situation, Rashi goes on, lo mafkino minei afal gav de lo kosiv bey apik l'nafshoch. You're dealing with a contingency situation where the agent had a deficient harshah. It lacked the critical phrase, the key phrase, take it for yourself. But if the agent successfully grabs the item, we don't take it away from him. There's a second version in the Rashi, Lishna Achrina. Let's read it together. The agent had to lay out expenses in order to travel to get to where the item was. And if he collected money, that's the compensation from the original owner, and kept those expenses for himself, lo mafkina minei, we're not going to take them away from him. And Rashi says, "Kach motzosi kosu b'tshuvas ha'goyim v'ze'ikar." Rashi prefers that approach. So now we go back to the Gemara. Rav Ashi Omar. According to Rashi, Rav Ashi is coming to argue on a Meimar. Rav Ashi says, "Kevon de kasvele." Since he writes in this document, or once he writes in this document, kol demisani mendino kabilas alai shliach shavya v'ikod yomar shutfa shavya. If this phrase appears in the harshah, kol demisani mendino kabilas alai, what does that mean? So, in the Shita Mekubetzis, in the Sefer, the Shita Mekubetzis, the Meiri commentary is presented. And he has two versions as to what this phrase means. One version is that the owner of the item says through this phrase, he says to the agent, whatever happens in your litigation in attempting to recover the item, whether you win or lose, I accept. And I won't come with tainus to you. I won't come with the claims against you. I sent you for making matters good for me, not to mess me up. So, according to that, the owner is declaring, whatever you do, whatever either success or failure you meet with, I accept it. That's one explanation. The other explanation is, whatever expenses you incur, I accept responsibility for compensating you. So if that appears in the Harshah, then you have here in the Gemara, you have two versions. One version says that is tantamount to viewing him as an agent. And the second version is that's tantamount to having him considered a partner. Let us look in Rashi now. Kevon de Kosev Kabilas Alai, Alma Shliach Shavya. By this appearing in the Harshah, it shows us that he's making him into a simple agent. Hilkoch Itofis Mafkino Mine. If he were to grab the expenses, we will take them away from him. Ulalishna kamo nami, according to the first lashon that we had above in the Rashi, e tofes mishel neemon. If this agent grabs the item from the entrusted individual, mafkinon mine, we'll take it away from him. Daha shliach bi almuhu, he's a mere agent, not an owner. Vahave ketoifes lebalchov, and that creates a problem. It makes him like someone who grabs on behalf of a creditor where other creditors would end up losing. The Gemara continues. Lamai nafkamina. What difference does it make whether we classify him as a shaliach or as a shutef, a mere agent or a partner? The answer is lamitvas palga. And we look at Rashi, lamitvas palga, momon, shehevi, imroisil akib chetzio. Let's say that this agent brought back half. He brought back an amount and he wants to keep for himself half of it. So if you say that he is viewed as a partner, he'd be able to do that. If you say he's an agent, he wouldn't be able to be toifes to withhold palga half. The next three words are the subject of a discussion. Do we include them in the Gemara text or not? Rashi includes them. V'hilchasa shliach shavya. The halacha would be that he is a mere agent, v'lo shokil midi, and he is not entitled to withhold anything for himself. According to what the Bach cites, mentions here that other Rishonim do not include this ruling of the Gemara in the text. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.